Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and listen to podcasts of prior shows under that same website under Public Affairs, and then look for Your Financial Choices. Today is July 8, 2020, my sister's birthday. Happy birthday, Vivian. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 26,067, the NASDAQ at 10,492, and the S&P at 3169. Tonight, we're discussing the impact of COVID on charitable giving and education, with more of an emphasis on the education part. These two items, they don't sound related, but I was just curious if there was any information yet on how these might be impacted, and thought that's how I come up with topics for my show, something I'm interested in learning more about, and make it a topic. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I will typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. If you have more complicated questions or want to keep your question private, you can also email through yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, that phone number is 610-758-8810. So when we think of financial planning, we think of the elements of financial planning, which I discussed on a recent show, and that includes typically your cash flow, income taxes, investments, risk management, retirement planning, and estate planning. But those can also include education planning and charitable giving. So recently, my brother had told me that my nephew was reconsidering returning to the college where he attended for his freshman year. He went to Occidental in California. He was thinking of staying home in Salt Lake and transferring to the University of Utah because he figured he was just doing online learning anyway. So he had started his freshman year, loved college, loved being involved and all of that. But then they switched to online learning like most educational institutions did. So he ended up back home and doing it online. And he just started thinking, hey, if I'm going to have to go back online again, why don't I just stay home, go to the University of Utah, where my brother's a professor, and save the money. And, you know, he already had the year away. So this got me kind of thinking, if it would be worthwhile to review the COVID impact on education planning. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. And then along those same lines, and speaking with clients who are required minimum distribution age, what was 70 and a half and is now age 72 since January 1 of 2020 for people who are turning who weren't already 70 and a half, the age is now 72, letting them know that they don't have to take their required minimum distribution for 2020 because of the CARES Act. They don't have to take their required minimum distribution. Many folks who are in that RMD age can use their required minimum distribution or a distribution from their IRA toward their charitable giving. And we call that a qualified charitable distribution. So if they're not required to take this distribution in 2020, they may not make their charitable contribution through that IRA in 2020. So I then started thinking, how will this impact charities when the demand for their services in the community are higher than ever? Many people in our communities are relying on nonprofits for extra services that are needed right now if they have lost jobs, need food for the children, that type of thing. So these nonprofits who are helping support our most needy in our communities may not be getting the funding that they typically were used to getting if there's a change in something like this with the required minimum distribution, or if those same people who may need help now were prior donors when they were fully employed and such. So I thought I'd like to talk a little bit about charitable giving tonight as well. So starting first with education, there was an article, it was actually an interview from Horse's Mouth, which is a service for financial advisors, and it was where their editor in Chief talked about the impact of the pandemic on college planning with Lynn O'Shaughnessy. And she is the creator of their Savvy College Planning program. So the interview begins with a discussion on applications and deadlines for acceptances to colleges, and that they have passed the typical deposit due date of May 1st. So May 1st is typically the date where you make your commitment and put a deposit down. But that many schools extended that deadline, obviously, because we were in the midst of a pandemic. So with many people feeling a little unsure about their financial situation, it made sense for schools to extend that due date. So the uncertainty around their financial situation stems, of course, from the loss of jobs, potential loss of jobs, reduced hours, reduced pay, or even a change in education plans from, you know, private schools or out-of-state schools to in-state, because they might be more affordable if people are more nervous about their ability to retain their job. They might say to their children, hey, maybe we need to make a change of plans from you going to that private school or that out-of-state school, and think about exploring more affordable options. And also, children may not want to move away from home during these uncertain times. Parents may not want them to be so far away if, you know, God forbid someone gets sick, whether it's the parent or the child. Sometimes families want to be together, and then you find out if someone's sick and then they can't be together. So that could cause some uncertainty with that. So children may be rethinking where they want to go to school. And I'm going to talk about what that impact of this might be. So Lynn O'Shaughnessy also mentions in the interview that it's a buyer's market. So this may help students who have a reach school. So hopefully we'll come out of this virtual learning environment eventually, and this could be the time to get into that school you may have thought you wouldn't. So think about this. If we have some kids who are rethinking private schools or out-of-state schools, schools might be a little bit desperate for enrollment. Maybe that reach school you had or that your child had, they might have been on the edge of getting in. Maybe they didn't get in. Well, this could be an opportunity maybe where they do, if they're willing to do virtual online learning. Also, many freshmen receive scholarships or aid, so we don't know what that will look like going forward as colleges and universities are pressed to cover more of the cost from other than tuition and room and board. So if we have fewer students going, there still would be fixed costs that schools would have to cover. They may not be able to give as much in scholarship, but it's going to be very interesting to watch, because they need to attract kids. So I would expect, are they going to be offering more to attract kids to at least get some tuition, or will they have to cut back on the aid that they're giving? Ms. O'Shaughnessy expects that more schools will put more students on wait lists rather than not accepting them, and more kids on the wait list so that if they don't get the numbers they want, then they can pull from the wait list. So that was interesting. So for kids who in the past may have been on a wait list for their favorite school, you might have more opportunities that could open up. But there are already so many unknowns. Students may not want to add another unknown by relying on a wait list. So we want to kind of maybe firm up or have dialogue with your kids about the options and what paths they have. There could be more or there could be fewer options. So I want to now take this information and talk about how this is going to play into financial decisions for education. And we'll do that as soon as we come back from this first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is Operations Director Neil Heaver. Many of the real voices you know at WDIY have been absent this spring as they observe the call to stay home and stay safe. WDIY has continued to provide NPR news and a variety of music during the pandemic. We hope to bring back the many choices and real voices, and plans are in the works to do so cautiously. Please check our website for information about returning hosts. Our best wishes to you and your loved ones, and thank you for listening and supporting us at WDIY, Lehigh Valley Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can do it off air. Just give your question to Lori and she will write it down and bring it into the studio. Okay, so we're talking about the impact of COVID on education planning. As I mentioned, we might have more opportunities for our students to get into schools that we otherwise might have thought they couldn't if, in fact, those same institutions have lower enrollment because people are afraid to go to them or don't want to, pay for a high-priced school. If they're going to be doing it online. But this could be an opportunity for some kids who have the money and can afford it or who would otherwise qualify for scholarships and aids to maybe get into those same kind of institutions. We might also have those kids who don't want to go to those schools who parents have saved up such large amounts for those types of schools and now may not need that money. So we're going to talk about the interplay of that. So if you've planned and saved for your child to attend a private college who may not want to attend one now, as I mentioned, my nephew going to, Occidental, quite expensive, and now is switching to an in-state public university where his father works, so he may even get a discount. All of a sudden, you might not need all that money you saved in the 529. So child may not want to attend that private higher cost school or that out-of-state school. Your child might be offered more scholarships because they're trying to attract your child to come to that school or attract more students to come. When we're talking about how much it's costing for school, typically there's need-based financial aid that may be available, and then there's also merit-based academic scholarships that can be available. And quite often, you can work with the school where your child wants to go to maybe meet some of the financial need rather than pay the full price. It's not often that people pay the full price. Quite often, there is some type of aid that especially private schools will provide. So some colleges might offer more to lure students again to their campus, whether it's virtual or in person. And for financial aid, the student with their parent or parents must complete a FAFSA form or the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And it's a snapshot of the current financial assets. And that excludes retirement accounts and the house. but it also includes the parent and child's most recent tax return. So this is going to be interesting because we might have tax returns for 2019 where people were still fully employed, whereas in 2020 they may not be. And I do believe that you can mention that when you're applying for financial aid, if there was a change in circumstances, and provide documentation reflecting that, so that it wouldn't necessarily have to be based on the 2019 tax returns. And as far as that current picture of the assets, we have seen the stock market go up and down and back up again. So those values in March, you know, at one point had taken quite a dive. We've seen most of that come back. But we might see some more volatility. So when you're going to fill out the financial aid application, keep in mind when you're doing it where we are with the market valuations. But bottom line, you may not need as much as you thought for college costs if you now qualify for more aid, or if you qualify for more scholarships because schools are trying to lure students to come in the fall. And you may not have to spend as much, or may not have to spend as much simply because your child decides to go to a public in-state school rather than that private school that you thought. So if you had saved money in a college savings account, a 529 plan, 529 stands for the IRS code section that governs these types of accounts because there's tax-favored treatment to them, you may end up with excess amounts in the 529 account. So I want to talk a little bit about 529s and what your options are for 529 accounts. Broadly, and then I'll get into an article that I retrieved from Fidelity, but broadly, if you have excess amounts in 529 accounts and the beneficiary of the 529 account isn't going to use all the money for undergraduate education, but you expect them to go on to grad school, they can use the 529 monies for graduate school as well. The owner of the 529 may name a new related beneficiary, like another child, or they could even name themselves. I even believe you can name nieces and nephews. There's a list of what is deemed to be closely related in identifying eligible beneficiaries for 529 accounts if you choose to change the beneficiary, the current beneficiary. You can use some of it toward loans, so I'll talk about that. You can take a non-qualified distribution from a 529, meaning it wasn't used for education costs. How it ends up being tax-free, this 529 account, you basically put money into it, invest it. If it grows through, you know, just market valuation and or interest or dividends on the account, income, total return, we call that. If the account grows and you take money out of it to use for qualified education expenses, you don't have to recognize any income on that distribution. There's no income tax on that growth in earnings, which is fabulous, and that's why it's governed under this special code section of the IRS, code section 529. So if, though, you choose not to use it for qualified education expenses, as I said in my little story here, we have excess monies in the 529 because your child ended up not needing it. Maybe you don't want to name another beneficiary. You could take the money out of the 529. It would be deemed a non-qualified distribution, and you would pay tax, but only on the earnings. But there's also a 10% penalty. So tax plus a 10% penalty on those earnings. But you may even be able to get an exception to the 10% penalty if there is an exception. So it could be disability, death, scholarship. So if your child ended up getting a scholarship for $10,000 and you could take a $10,000 distribution, it's pro rata on the distribution as to what piece is income versus the original contribution to the account. So you could avoid the 10% penalty on earnings related to that, for example. You could also pass it down to the next generation. So you could just continue to hold it in your name without renaming a new beneficiary. When you die, you can name a successor owner, and then that successor owner would continue the account and name a beneficiary. So those are the broad options. What I want to do when we come back from this next break then is dive into some of the details of the 529 and why these can be so powerful, and make sure that you understand your options if you find yourself in a situation where you have not had to use all of the 529 monies. Here you've saved and saved and saved, hoping that your child was going to go to that special Ivy League school, and instead they've decided to stay local, to be close to mom and dad. So we will continue our discussion. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about the impact of COVID on charitable giving and education. And we've started our discussion on education in particular. Hence, if someone has saved buckets of money in a 529 account and now your child's dreams and path has changed such that you're going to end up with excess funds in your 529 plan, what are your options? So we're going to talk about that a little bit. I will mention that sometimes, too, this is why when we discuss education planning and funding with clients, sometimes we don't recommend fully funding these 529 accounts to their maximum, because if it's not used, well, if you have someone to pass it on to, it's a great estate planning tool. But if there aren't subsequent children or other members of the family to pass these excess monies on to, then you certainly don't want to overfund it either. But it could be a good estate planning option as well. So let's talk about some of the items to watch out for 529 plans, to make sure that you're thinking of all of these and managing the 529 plan correctly. But first, let me mention the phone number again, and that is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. If you'd like to ask a question, you can do it live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give the question to Lori C., and she'll write it down and bring it into me. So Fidelity had a 9-step guide to help you make your 529 savings go as far as possible. And I think it was a great guide. They really did a great job. And what they want to point out, or what they point out in step one of their guide, is to make sure that you understand all of the expenses around education and qualified education costs, but also the expenses and resources of college funding. So they first mention adding up all those, what we'll call qualified education costs, tuition, fees, room and board, books and supplies, school-related special services, computer costs, and making sure that they're around education, meaning you can't have computer costs like Call of Duty software. That doesn't count. I mean, it has to be computer cost and software relating to the education. And then you deduct any cost already covered by tax-free educational assistance. So things like Pell Grants, tax-free scholarships, fellowships, tuition discounts. So you kind of deduct that, because we're trying to get to the qualified education expenses that you can use toward a qualified distribution from the 529 account. So first understand all the cost, reduce it by all the free money, and then also keep in mind, and I thought this was great for them to point this out, and we've talked about this on prior shows, you want to make sure that you factored in other education credits that could be available to you that would be considered free. And what we're typically thinking about here is the American Opportunity Tax Credit, which is for the 4 years of undergraduate education. And it could be up to a $2,500 tax credit, which is huge. It's huge if you're within certain income brackets and if you have that as out-of-pocket expenses. So in essence, we cannot double dip for education benefits. So if we're going to take money out of the 529 to cover qualified education expenses, and that money then is tax-free, the IRS isn't going to let us use that same money or deductions towards the American Opportunity Tax Credit. But we can use them like hand-in-hand. So if I have at least $4,000 of out-of-pocket expenses toward tuition, then, and I'm within the income brackets for the American Opportunity Tax Credit, then I could get a $2,500 tax benefit for that. And if I have another $20,000 of additional tuition and or room and board, I can use the 529 money for that. So quite often what we'll do is we'll have our clients pay $4,000 out of pocket to get a $2,500 tax credit. Then they're only net $1,500 out of pocket. And then use the 529 accounts for the other additional cost. Okay, so we don't want to double dip. They further describe which expenses qualify. So I mentioned, you know, kind of tongue in cheek about the computer costs, and you can't use like software like, you know, Call of Duty or something like that. You want to make sure when you pay qualified education expenses from the 529 that your withdrawals are going to be tax-free and penalty-free because you're actually taking the distribution for qualified expenses. So the tuition expenses for college, but, and as I mentioned, room and board, books and supplies, special services required by the university. There are some other expenses that also qualify for 529s, and this was fairly new. As of 2019, a qualified expense from the 529 includes tuition expenses, tuition only in this case, for elementary, middle, and high schools, whether it's private, public, or religious. So this could be another place where you could use some of that 529 money if it's excess. Here's where you have to be careful. If you have the 529 account for Joe Jr. and you realize Joe Jr. is not going to go to that high-priced private college anymore and you're going to have extra money in his 529 account, and you still have Susie Jr. in a private school in high school, and the tuition is, let's say, $20,000, you can use $10,000 of a 529 for Susie for that private school. So elementary, middle, or high school. What you just have to make sure is that you can't commingle those. You can't use Susie's money for Joe Jr., and you can't use Joe Jr.'s money for Susie Jr. Susie Jr. would have to have her own account. So there could be an opportunity where if you may have only set up one account thinking you were going to save for both kids in one account to make it easier, you would want to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer to a new account for Susie. And that would be allowed because Susie would be the sibling or your child. So that is a relation that is a valid one to make a transfer to her. So lots of expenses covered as qualified education expenses from a 529 for our college kids, less those free tax monies. You can't double dip on that either. And then if you still have excess funds, another place to use it is for the elementary, middle, or high school tuition you may have, but it's only up to tuition. It's only up to $10,000. So if tuition is only $5,000, then it's only going to be a qualified expense if you do it for $5,000. So I'll continue this discussion when we come back from this next break, but we are at the halfway point. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, Lehigh Valley. WDIY News, weather, and traffic. I'm Shondi Gray. It is 6:30 and 74 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight, we're going to have flash flood watch, heavy rain, low around 69. Thursday, partly sunny, possible showers, high 91. Thursday night is going to be low around 71. Friday, more showers, high near 86. And Friday night, we're going to have thunderstorms, showers, low around 71. Saturday, more showers, high 90. And Saturday night, low around 70. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. Welcome back. We are talking about the COVID impact on charitable giving and education, starting with education. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in. So talking, referencing an article from Fidelity as to a nine-step guide to help you make your 529 savings go as far as possible, in light of the fact that we may see a lot of changes in our education costs for our children if our kids decide to stay home, if our kids decide to stay in-state, if our kids decide to not go to maybe a higher-priced private institution because of family dynamics and maybe repercussions from people losing jobs or having reduced hours or reduced pay because of the pandemic. So what are we going to do with that extra 529 money? But let's make sure that we're using it the proper way to begin with. And this would apply in any circumstances, whether it's pandemic or not, to make sure we're using it properly. So understanding qualified education expenses for college tuition and related fees, room and board, books and supplies, services, special services, computers. A note on room and board. So back to their comment about which expenses qualify. We want to make sure that people understand this for two reasons. Room and board. One, you might say, my child is not staying at the college. They're going to get an apartment. So I have had clients who don't realize that if your child is in an apartment, you still could take a withdrawal from the 529 for room and board. We think of room and board being at the college or the institution, and they don't always equate it. And it's like, what an aha moment when they realize they can take money out of the 529 to cover room and board for that off-campus apartment. Here's the little asterisk, and that is the allowance for room and board as a qualified education expense for a distribution from a 529 account has a limitation. So the article says the allowance for room and board included in the school's cost of attendance for federal financial aid calculations, and two, the actual amount charged if the student is living in housing operated by the educational institution. So whatever the institution is charging for the child to live there, that would be considered room and board. But it's a qualified distribution from the 529 for room and board cannot exceed that amount. So if your child is living in the lap of luxury and paying, $1,000 a month for an apartment and $500 a month for food because they buy everything pre-made, that's $1,500 a month. Well, the cost of room and board at the educational institution might be more like $800 a month. I'm making this up. So you would be limited to the distribution from the 529 for qualified education expenses for room and board to what the college would otherwise charge. All right. So keep that in mind. And that is a great way. Now, textbooks also count, computers I've mentioned, related equipment, services. It's important to keep receipts. If you withdraw money for anything that doesn't meet the qualified expense criteria, any part of the distribution that is made up of earnings on contributions will be taxed as ordinary income and could incur that 10% penalty I mentioned earlier. And again, that penalty may be waived if there are extenuating circumstances such as disability or death of the beneficiary, or if the beneficiary receives a scholarship. So I had kind of mentioned that. Their third point is keep good records. It is your job as the account owner to keep those records. The 529 custodian obviously will provide a tax document at the end of the year to say what your distributions were. I think it even includes your contributions. And the school will issue a 1090-AT to show the tuition. Those have even changed over the years. What I generally ask clients for when we have education benefits that we're taking advantage of, whether it's distributions from the 529 as tax-free, or if we are taking advantage of the American Opportunity Tax Credit, I will ask the client to have their student go online to their account and ask for a transcript of their activity for the year, because we do want to make sure that we're matching the distribution from the 529 accounts with the charges and the payments for the year. They have to match in the same year. You can't pay $20,000 in tuition in September of 2020. What did I say? $20,000 in 2020, September of 2020, and then reimburse yourself in January of 2021 and have it as a qualified distribution because it's in a separate year. They have to be in the same year. So you want to make sure that you're matching your qualified higher education expenses with the distributions from the 529 in the same year to avoid penalties. Some people will have the 529 plan pay it directly to the institution. That's one way you can do it. Fidelity's fourth point is decide how to withdraw the funds. So you may withdraw the funds if you have, let's say, advanced the money. As I mentioned, if I pay $20,000 of tuition in the fall because it was just easy to do it out of my bank account and I now want to reimburse myself, I can have the 529 pay the $20,000 to me. I could also have the 529 direct the payment to my child. I could also direct the 529 to make the payment directly to the institution. So you want to think about how you're doing that. Sometimes the institution isn't going to want, you know, a check for $250 and a check for, $500 as kind of the items that your child chooses for, living or room and board or college courses, which could change the cost. They may not want it like here and there. So typically what I usually see parents doing is advancing the money and then reimbursing themselves out of the 529. And once you get used to it, you kind of get into a rhythm. I have seen where parents make the check payable to the child. In those circumstances, so for example, I had someone once paid for their child up front for, let's say, the fall, and I don't remember all the details, so I'll just make up a story. Paid $6,000 for tuition for the child in September, and had the child, had the distribution from the 529 of $6,000 payable to the child. So now the child has received that tax document saying $6,000 came out of this 529 and it's reported in your tax ID number. Kid drops out of school. They don't have to pay the tuition now, but the kid took the $6,000 that was advanced to them and spent it. Well, now that $6,000 would be taxable on the child's tax return. But again, remember, it's only the earnings that are going to be income taxable and subject to a 10% penalty if they weren't used for qualified education expenses. So there may be circumstances where you might have your child have the distribution. Keep in mind that kids could also be subject to something called the kiddie tax. The kiddie tax applies if the child has unearned income over a certain threshold, and then that income could get taxed at the parent's rate. So it might not make a huge difference, but there still is a little bit of a like a standard deduction relating to that. So it still could be cheaper than having it all taxed on the parent's account. Another item they mention in this Fidelity article, plan ahead. 529 account funds may conflict with other tax incentives. So I mentioned about the American Opportunity Tax Credit earlier, and here's where we get some of the numbers for the thresholds. American Opportunity Tax Credits allows families of undergraduates to deduct the first $2,000 spent on qualified education expenses and 25% of the next $2,000. So remember I said we have them pay $4,000 out of pocket and they get a $2,500 tax credit. That's how it's calculated. So you may just want to do the first $2,000, get the $2,000 credit and forget about the next $2,000 for $500. Maybe just at a minimum you want to do the $2,000. So to qualify for the full credit, at least for 2019, single parents must have a modified adjusted gross income of $80,000 or less. And married filing joint for 2019 was $160,000. The total credit cannot exceed $2,500 per tax year, and the credit can be claimed for only 4 years. And that's per child. So if you have two children in school, that would be a total of $5,000 if you did the $4,000 each. The lifetime learning credit, this is where it's nice for those kids who may not have used all of their 529 money for their undergraduate program, want to save it for their graduate studies, but there still could be an education credit available to them called the Lifetime Learning Credit, which provides up to a $2,000 tax credit on the first $10,000 of college expenses. And many graduate programs cost more than $10,000 as well. So this provides up to $2,000 tax credit on the first $10,000 of college expenses, so long as your modified adjusted gross income is $68,000 or less in 2019 for a single filer, or $136,000 if married and filing joint. There is no limit to the number of years this credit can be claimed. So sometimes those graduate studies may take longer than a couple years, might be 3 or 4 years, and that would be available. But it's $2,000 on the first $10,000. So if you spend less than $10,000, then the credit is also limited as well. Item six, prioritize which 529 accounts to spend from first. If your child has more than one 529 savings account, such as an additional account through a grandparent, knowing which account to use first or how to take advantage of them concurrently could help. So the point here is you've heard or I've had clients say to me, oh, you know, I was told if I had a 529 for my grandchild, it was going to impact their financial aid, so I'm not going to do it. But that is not the whole story. And especially for residents of Pennsylvania, we can get a credit on our tax return or a deduction, excuse me, not a credit, a deduction on our Pennsylvania tax return up to $15,000 per 529 beneficiary per donor. So if there's a husband and wife, two spouses, and each of them make a $15,000 contribution to a beneficiary's 529 account, as long as they have at least that much income, then they can get a deduction up to that amount per child. Okay, and it doesn't have to be your child. I can make a $15,000 contribution to my niece or my nephew, and it could be in Utah, Michigan, anywhere. Pennsylvania allows the deduction to encourage education funding and planning by giving residents a deduction on their tax return. You can save 3.07%. Okay, so grandparents, you can do it. But what is this about causing income or affecting the financial aid for your grandchild? Here's the scoop. Remember I mentioned earlier that FAFSA, when your child, the student, is applying for financial aid, they have to put down their resources available. And the child's resources are counted more than even the parents. The grandparents' accounts typically are not included. But if a grandparent takes a distribution out of a 529 for their grandchild in the freshman year, and let's say it's $10,000, it's not income to the child. It's not income taxable to the child, but it is considered a resource. So that $10,000 resource to the child is going to count more toward their financial aid eligibility. So generally what we do is we tell grandparents, wait until like the junior year to make those distributions from your 529 account. The parents can do it. And that's typically only if the student is going to qualify for financial aid. So many people get all wrapped up about this, and then you find out the parents make $1 million and the kid's never going to qualify for financial aid anyway. So what difference does it make? So let's think about all of the ways this works before we get too excited about doing or not doing something. Folks, we are at our last break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Talk to you in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org. Or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about COVID impact on education planning and charitable giving, and we're just kind of wrapping up our talk about education planning. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and questions can also be submitted through yourfinancialchoices.com. What started this whole conversation was me thinking, what's going to happen 529s if the kids end up, you know, staying home, going to in-state institutions, public universities, parents lost jobs, they don't want to pay for private college anymore. What happens if there's 529 monies and too much left? What are we going to do with it? So we've kind of touched on some of these things. That is the point in this Fidelity article about the money left over in your 529, making a smart move. I had mentioned that you could change the beneficiary on it. You could use it for graduate school. I also had wanted to mention earlier, I kind of had forgotten, I had talked about college. I had also talked about private, public, or religious elementary, middle, and high schools. The 529 monies, qualified expenses, have also been expanded to include other post-secondary training institutions and schools related to vocational schools. And as long as they are in a student aid program administered by the U.S. Department of Education. And the SECURE Act also said that this would be for use 529s to cover expenses related to any registered apprenticeship program attended by the beneficiary. This includes any additional costs such as fees, equipment, books, and other supplies. So that is also a use. So you may have a beneficiary who who would like to use it for that. You can split up a 529 as long as it's a relative, a particular related beneficiary. You can do a trustee-to-trustee transfer to push some of the funds to another beneficiary, but you can't use one fund to for multiple beneficiaries. They have to have their own 529 account. I'd also mentioned, I believe, that you could withdraw up to $10,000 from the plan to pay down qualified student loans penalty-free. If I hadn't mentioned that, that was a big one, with certain conditions. And the first is that the $10,000 maximum is a lifetime limit for a beneficiary and each sibling. So you know how I had just said you can't use a 529 for multiple people for qualified education expenses? This is one thing you can do. So if I have a 529 for Joe Jr. and Susie has a student loan out there still, I can use $10,000 of Joe Jr.'s 529 for Susie because she's a sibling. It's a maximum of $10,000 lifetime limit. So we can only help the kids with their student loans to the tune of $10,000 one time in their life. But a child, a family that has two children could take out $20,000. Okay, so we could use it for Susie and Joan Jr. if that's the case. Secondly, plan holders cannot claim any student loan interest deductions paid with this money. So they're not, again, going to let you double dip. It's like a coordination of the benefits available. And as I said, too, you can also pass down to another owner, a successor owner who can then do that. So changing designated beneficiaries, rolling over funds from 529 to another 529 for other children. There's no penalty for that, no tax for that. And remember, I said if you wanted to take money out, if there was an exception to the 10% penalty for a scholarship, would be that. We talked about how college savings affects student aid and loans a little bit as far as grandparents. For the most part, 529s held by parents don't factor in too tremendously. So when we're talking about the expected family contribution, 529s don't have such a huge impact on that. And then lastly, the Fidelity article talks about safeguarding your plan assets, making sure that you're, you know, investing accordingly. And typically, there might be target date funds available in 529 accounts that automatically adjust as your child moves closer to going to college, and that's great. But if it's not set up that way, then you might want to make sure that you're watching it a little bit more carefully so that you don't lose all of that money that you saved right when they're going to college. So be careful of that as well. If you do have 529 monies, you might want to review how they're allocated as we're in these questionable times right now. So for charitable giving, I'll finish up. I don't have a lot of time left to talk about charitable giving, but I do want to talk about charitable giving incentives. One, through the CARES Act for 2020, whether or not you itemize, you will be able to take an above-the-line deduction for charitable giving up to $300. We used to have above-the-line charitable giving many, many years ago. I didn't look up to see how long ago it was, but I know it was at some point in my past that we did have above-the-line deductions for charitable giving if we didn't itemize. They are bringing that back, though very, very limited to only $300. It's not a huge deduction. So if you're in a 24% tax bracket, it would save you $72. But $72 is still something. And the reason I want to mention it is because if you are someone who gives but have always thought, well, I can't itemize anymore, you might not even keep track of those receipts. So for 2020, now that you can deduct $300, you might want to make sure that you tuck those receipts away so that you have them when you go to file your 2020 tax return. Because, as I said, if you're in a 24% tax bracket, it saves you $72, and $72 is something. For those who do their giving through qualified charitable distributions through their IRAs, as I mentioned at the top of the show, you still can do that and avoid the income tax. Okay, so if you are required minimum distribution age, you can still do your charitable giving through your IRA. You are still eligible to do qualified charitable distributions. And in fact, I think even the people who are 72, they still can do it even at 70 and a half. So I want to make that little clarification. They never changed that in the SECURE Act for the qualified charitable distribution. You are eligible to do that at age 70 and a half, whether it's your IRA or if you're a beneficiary. Again, at age 70 and a half, people can do qualified charitable distributions. But here's the thing. When I'm talking with clients, if you're not required to make or to take a required minimum distribution, therefore you're not already having to include it in income, do I really want you to do your qualified charitable distribution in a year that it wouldn't be taxable anyway? So we'd like to revisit this, and I'll explain it by giving an example. So if in 2020 your required minimum distribution is $20,000 and you do annual charitable giving of $10,000, you can skip the required minimum distribution, still do the $10,000 as I mentioned, and have no income tax consequence. So you didn't take your $20,000 required minimum distribution, but you just want to do that $10,000 qualified charitable distribution. You don't pay tax on it. That's still a good thing. You're not paying tax on that distribution from your IRA, so that still could be good. In 2021, in this scenario, assuming your required minimum distribution is about the same, $20,000, and you still want to do that annual $10,000 qualified charitable distribution, you would still have a $10,000 income recognition in 2021. So $20,000 RMD, $10,000 to the charity in 2021, because you already did the other $10,000 in 2020. So now I'm recognizing $10,000 of income in 2021. If I'm in a 22% tax bracket, I'm going to pay $2,200 of taxes in 2021 on that, you know, remaining RMD. But if instead you waited to do your 2020 giving until January of 2021, so you tell that favorite nonprofit, hey, I'm not going to do my normal charitable giving in 2020 because there will be some tax advantages to me by waiting. I'm going to do it in January. So you just have to wait a tiny bit longer. I'm going to do it in 2021. I'm going to give you the $10,000 then. And my 2021 giving, I'm going to also do in 2021, maybe throughout the year, maybe mid-year, maybe December. So in essence, in 2021, you're going to give $20,000 out of your IRA, out of your RMD, and now you recognize no income at all, but you've made $20,000 of charitable giving. We've just saved $2,200. So that's why I might have people wait to do their required or their qualified charitable distribution in a year where they would be paying tax on their RMD. So my expectation is that if the giving shifts this way, charities may feel it a bit more in their 2020 donations. The same would apply if people are doing United Way giving through payroll deduction, but they lose their jobs, discontinue their pledges. This is where we hope that philanthropists really need to step up and fill that gap that we hope is temporary, of course. Because per a Fidelity Charitable article, they did talk about that while a lot of people still expect that their giving is going to maintain, it's not 100% necessarily. So the study said most donors plan to maintain or even increase the amount they donate to charity this year. In contrast, volunteer activity is likely to dramatically decrease due to the pandemic, which means some nonprofits may have to hire additional people. Most donors do not plan to shift their giving to different organizations in light of the pandemic. They will stay the course by continuing to support their favorite nonprofits. Many donors don't feel that they have the information they need to effectively support efforts to combat COVID-19. Many donor-advised fund donors are responding and increasing some of their giving. But I'm not sure 100% are going to continue doing it. So for those folks who are out there who are philanthropic, this might be the year to step up your giving. There are a number of ways to do that. If you're not going to do it through your required minimum distribution, there are other options as far as donating highly appreciated long-term securities to your favorite charity. Do it in a big way, and maybe you could do some IRA conversions or something like that. So it's worthwhile taking the time to explore your education planning and your charitable giving intent in these times, because it is a worthwhile endeavor, worth taking the time to make sure you're doing everything properly as we have, you know, things are evolving. It just seems to always be evolving. So good luck to any students who are applying to colleges and making your decisions as to where you're going to go this fall. Good luck with that. And parents for helping them fund that education, applying for that financial aid using the FAFSA form and or funding it through 529s. And, of course, negotiating with schools as to merit packages and aid packages that they may be able to provide. And you can actually work with different schools to get that additional funding that you might need. Be a little competitive in those packages. Folks, thanks for listening. Next week, we're going to talk about retirement account rules under the CARES Act. Is that right? What is next week? Retirement account rules under the CARES Act next week. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thank you, Shandi, and thank you, Lori, and thank you, listeners.